Chapter 12. Information Warfare and Propaganda. Much of Antifa's propaganda is explicit and in your face. The chants, the graffiti, and the symbols. They can show up anywhere, on buildings and clothing and even at sports games. One of the strategies Antifa used to mainstream their symbols and messaging has been through infiltrating the official fan clubs of American soccer teams. Modelled after the European-style politicization of soccer fan organizations, Antifa ideologues have taken over the Emerald City Supporters and the Timbers Army. Both are official fan clubs for Major League Soccer, MLS, teams. The Seattle Sounders and the Portland Timbers, respectively. The soccer fan clubs have reserved seating where members coordinate cheers, chants, and flag waving together. It is normal to see dozens of people displaying the Antifa Two Flags logo and the Iron Front symbol at games. They also drape the symbols over huge banners in the lower sections, displaying the propaganda for television cameras. In August 2019, MLS banned political symbols but reversed course after just a month following boycotts, massive pushback, and negative press coverage. The media coverage of the issue was favorable to Antifa and the fan clubs, who called the logos symbols of anti-racism and anti-fascism. If Antifa's operationalized tactics can be described as a multi-pronged machine working through violent and non-violent means, the lubricant keeping it all going is information warfare. A military concept, information warfare refers to the use, denial, exploitation, or manipulation of information against an opponent. That includes hiding information as well as spreading disinformation and propaganda to wage war. And no one does propaganda for Antifa than sympathetic journalists and useful idiots. In my first year covering the Antifa beat, one of the things that shocked me as much as street violence was the alternate reality local and national press presented on Antifa. Why do citizens of cities like Portland or Seattle have tolerance for a transparently violent extremist movement? For the majority of residents living in areas affected by Antifa's violence, they actually don't see the real Antifa. The fighting and rioting are isolated to small areas and for limited hours of a day. It actually is possible to live a normal life without ever realizing there are riots happening in another part of the city. Even with an extraordinary example like Seattle's Chaz, if one did not travel through Capitol Hill, there would be no reason to believe it was besieged by extremists. Video recordings and live streams by independent media journalists have been exceptionally informative. Those videos provide the up-close, raw, and uncensored look into Antifa's extremism. Antifa know this and have made it a priority to keep out journalists like myself, even releasing manuals on how to obstruct the work of unapproved press. But more importantly, they've made key allies in the media to counter negative coverage, amplify their propaganda messaging, and discredit their shared opponents. The American public has been inundated with non-stop propaganda that obfuscates and lies about Antifa, simultaneously presenting them as anti-fascists fighting racism and a figment of the right's imagination. How many people who have heard of Antifa actually know the movement is made up of organized networks of anarchist communists who have the goal, training, and determination to overthrow the US government? Fake news. If you're an average apolitical American, these and similar headlines are probably what you've skimmed about Antifa at some point since 2017. Anti-fascists will fight Trump's fascism in the streets. Hurricane Harvey, Antifa are on the ground in Texas helping flooding relief efforts. Reminder, if you're not Antifa, you're Profa. Anti-fascists linked to zero murders in the US in 25 years. Who caused the violence at protests? It wasn't Antifa. This is just a small sample of headlines from Antifa-related stories that ran in the media, from The Guardian to The Washington Post, since 2016. If one isn't tuned to the nuances of the American political and culture war, for example, people like my own parents, the default position is to view Antifa as the good guys. With the obligations of family life and work, few have time to actually investigate beyond the headlines and leading paragraphs. The role of the media is to inform the public. But too often, when it comes to Antifa, we are fed incorrect information. I don't believe most liberal journalists set out to intentionally mislead their audiences and readers about Antifa. I think it is pure ignorance that leads news personalities like MSNBC's Joy Reid or CNN's Chris Cuomo to repeat some variation that Antifa is just short for anti-fascist. But something different that I observed in my years of reporting on Antifa is the existence of whole networks of writers and so-called journalists who intentionally spread pro-Antifa messaging. Their stories go beyond mere bias and into the realm of propaganda. Most do it as ideological fellow travellers on the far left, but some, I've learned, are actually members of the militant Antifa movement. In an earlier chapter, I referenced former National Public Radio contributor and current Teen Vogue writer Kim Kelly as an example of a journalist whose writing is sympathetic to the radical left. One of my greatest hopes is that the work I'm doing at Teen Vogue and elsewhere provides that spark for someone else someday, she tweeted in November 2019. The example of Kelly is egregious. But she isn't an outlier. Unpersoning. One of the eye-opening experiences after my beating by Antifa thugs in 2019 was the number of journalists who began targeting me with such animosity and viciousness that they were indistinguishable from Antifa accounts. Journalists I never interacted with pursued me with an obsessiveness I can only describe as a personal vendetta. Their goal has been not only to delegitimize me as a journalist, but to make me a toxic figure that others would be afraid of associating with. They pursued that goal through writing lies and half-truths, and even inciting violence. 2 months after my June 2019 attack, a damning story seeking to expose me was published on the blog site of Portland Mercury, a local left-wing alternative paper. Ben, an Antifa activist using a pseudonym, told the story's author, Alex Zielinski, that for nearly 2 years he had been a spy in Patriot Prayer, the right-wing Portland area group. He made the shocking allegation that I made a pact with Patriot Prayer's leader Joey Gibson for mutual protection. There's an understanding that Patriot Prayer protects him, no, and he protects them, alleged Ben in the story. To provide evidence for his claim, the paper was supplied with an undercover video he filmed. Recorded on May 1st, 2019, it showed a group of Patriot Prayer associates milling around a Portland street and discussing where to go. For some brief moments, I can be seen walking by in the background. Here's what really happened. On that day, Antifa and other far-left groups organized May Day-related protests throughout Portland. A group of right-wingers organized their own separate flag-waving rally. I covered both sides, who were in different parts of the city. Toward the end of the day, I was informed, in a private message by an independent left-wing journalist, that the group of right-wingers might go to Cider Riot, a pub where Rose City Antifa had organised an after-party. I followed the right-wing group, who walked around aimlessly for an hour in northeast Portland. I did not hear what they were saying. I was on my phone, reviewing the footage and photographs I recorded earlier in the day. Eventually, they walked to Cider Riot, where around 50 Antifa immediately masked up. Soon after, a mutual street brawl broke out between the factions. I filmed the fight, but was stopped after a masked Antifa woman from the pub blinded me directly with bear mace. Another journalist, Oregon State student Noah Bucci, had his camera smashed with a weapon by a person in black bloc. He was then assaulted by several Antifa when he tried to follow and identify his assailant. I was a victim of Antifa's violence that day, but the Portland Mercury made me out to be a sinister co-conspirator of a violent attack on the pub. It was a bogus claim. I was never reached for comment, and without knowing who Ben was, I couldn't even address my accuser. The network of Antifa-supporting journalists is powerful, not only because they work with media sites or papers, but also because their smears are laundered between one another and amplified far beyond the original publication. The smears eventually become citations in a Wikipedia entry or the first results in a Google search. Anytime someone looks me up online, they will see the false smears first. Super awkward for right-wing blogger Andy No to make a cameo in video of plot against Antifa, read a headline by Tess Owen in Vice News. Courtney Hagel of Media Matters for America wrote, "Media presented far-right grifter Andy No as a credible journalist. He was just caught covering for far-right extremists as they plan violent attacks." I doubt these writers actually watched the full 18-minute video that was selectively released by Ben. Fortunately, at least one journalist did. Reason magazine's Robbie Suave watched the video and analysed its content in a report in September 2019. The message coming from left-of-centre media was clear. Patriot Prayer planned the Cider Riot attack. No was tacitly involved, and Ben's video proves it. The problem, of course, is that the video, which mostly depicts a small group of people standing around discussing which side of the street they should walk on when and if they approach Antifa and conversing with the undercover Ben, proves no such thing. I have watched it from start to finish at least 5 times, and it does not even establish that the group of right-wing agitators planned an attack, let alone that No was aware of such a plot. Indeed, the Portland Mercury article that received such rave reviews from the Daily Beast, Vice, Media Matters, and others makes little effort to explain what was so damning about the video, and Zelensky spends much of her article lionizing Ben's actions without offering any independent scrutiny of his claims. Alex Zelensky, a former reporter for the defunct hard-left Think Progress news site and author of the Portland Mercury hit piece, has played an important role in normalizing Antifa in Portland. I believe that her coverage since she became the paper's news editor protects Antifa, amplifies their talking points about fascists in Portland, and joins in demonizing Antifa's opponents. Sometimes this manifests in shockingly cruel ways. Soon after Aaron J. Danielson was shot and killed by Antifa shooter Michael Rhino, she misidentified him as a different man who, she says, supported terrorism. Bishop, whose legal name is Aaron Danielson, made headlines in 2017 when he brought a rifle to a Patriot Prayer rally in downtown Portland. Bishop was also a strong support of Jeremy Christian, the white supremacist who killed 2 men and critically injured another on a MAX train in 2017, Zelensky reported. She later had to issue a correction, which happens to all journalists. But her mistake is emblematic of a pattern. Beyond writing hit pieces and insults on social media, Zelensky's tweets may have actually put me in physical danger. Since Antifa beat me in 2019, I've had to develop discreet ways to cover their demonstrations and riots. This can involve dressing like them, but doing so is extremely risky. Antifa have informed their members and supporters to look for people who match my body shape and height. They've accosted the wrong people on several occasions, but they've also been right. At a violent downtown protest in June 2020, Antifa knew I was there and passed this information either directly or indirectly to Zelensky. While I was undercover and on the ground, she tweeted to tens of thousands of people, "Heads up all, it looks like Andy Ngo is here, wandering around with KOIN news reporters. I don't think they're aware." The second part of Zelensky's tweet informed everyone exactly where I could be found at that moment. The KOIN news crew stood about a block away from the demonstration and wore markings that identified them as part of the news station. After Zelensky sent her tweet, whether or not it was her intention, several people began to repeatedly shine a powerful green laser, capable of permanent vision damage, at my eyes. The mob began to gather across the street to confront me. I barely got out safely by pleading with a local reporter I just met to leave with her in her car. I wish I could say that Kim Kelly and Alex Zelensky are the radical exceptions in journalism, but they're just two examples among a cabal of messengers who work in media and have the ability to launder their narratives far and wide. The damage they've done in making the public ignorant and misinformed on Antifa has been immense. But as left-wing writers in an industry run mostly by people on the left, their bias does not count against them. Take, for example, Harvard-educated Talia Lavin, a former fact-checker for the New Yorker magazine and an open Antifa activist. In 2018, she falsely accused Justin Gertner, a combat-wounded U.S. Marine veteran and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, forensics analyst, of having a neo-Nazi tattoo. She was absolutely wrong. The cross tattoo Gertner has on his elbow is a symbol for his platoon. He was severely injured by IEDs in Afghanistan, resulting in him losing both his legs. Lavin's mistake earned a rare and well-deserved public rebuke from ICE. She resigned in disgrace from the New Yorker and, in a series of tweets, made herself out to be the victim where she asked for donations. A mistake of that magnitude would be a career ender for any journalist perceived to be on the centre or right. But Lavin enjoys the leftist privilege of failing upward. After resigning from the New Yorker, she was given the opportunity to write freelance for a number of large publications. Her area of writing and research? Far-right extremism. In March 2019, Lavin was hired as an adjunct journalism instructor at New York University to teach an upcoming course on reporting on the far right. Her course was later cancelled because only two students had signed up. On multiple occasions throughout 2019 and 2020, Lavin's reporting that I collaborated with a terrorist group was false and contributed to the danger I faced. Andy Ngo is best known for providing kill lists to Atomwaffen and being a threat to our communities, she wrote in June 2020 on Twitter. The lie was retweeted more than 1,000 times. Atomwaffen is an American neo-Nazi terrorist organization. I have never had contact with that group or any terrorist organization. The lie was first started by Antifa accounts after my beating in an attempt to convince their followers that I deserved the assault. Antifa militants have projected the message on public buildings in Portland and distributed flyers with the lie. It has inspired others to call for me to be killed. Identifying Antifa Press. Without being familiar with the history of particular journalists, a good indication of their support for militant Antifa can be seen through observing how they're treated at BLM Antifa protests and riots. If they are allowed to freely interview, record, or photograph, that is a good sign the journalist produces Antifa-approved content. Antifa are instructed to be untrusting of journalists, even liberal ones who are sympathetic to them. They fear being identified by law enforcement through the journalists' published work. This became such a perceived issue by Antifa during the 2020 riots that the Freelance Journalists Union of the Industrial Workers of the World, IWW, issued a list of directives to journalists covering the ongoing uprising. If a comrade asks you to stop filming them, stop filming them. Generally speaking, our cameras should be trained on law enforcement and reactions, not to unintentionally incriminate comrades, read the announcement. If you accidentally capture comrades on film, obscure their faces, tattoos, and all other identifying characteristics before publishing. These rules fly in the face of journalistic ethics in that they put reporters into an explicit advocacy role where their mission is to protect one particular side, literally. This is not reporting. It is propaganda. One journalist I've observed following these directives is Robert Evans, a Portland-based staff writer with the left-wing investigative online outlet Bellingcat. He is a former editor at humor site Cracked and currently hosts several podcasts. Evans is popular with the far left and Antifa on social media, who regularly boost his content. On July 19, 2020, Evans disputed someone's characterization of the arson attack on the Portland Police Association, PPA, during a night of rioting by Antifa. User at J. Reeling tweeted, "Tonight there was a fire at the Portland Police Association building while police clashed with protesters. The Reichstag fire in Berlin in 1933 was used as a pretext for mass arrests of Nazi Party opponents." In response, Evans wrote, "This is bullshit. I was there. The burning of the PPA was an intelligent, deliberate, and successful action by well-organized activists. Do not take this away from them. The PPA was a well-chosen target, and burning was a justified act of protest against a valid target." Evans later deleted the tweets. Despite his open support for violent extremism, Evans was profiled by the New York Times due to his coverage of the Portland riots. The biased narratives and even falsehoods propagated by local journalists don't stay local. They are amplified by legacy media on the East Coast, which then pass that narrative onto the international press. Despite Evans's extremism, he's been awarded mainstream legitimacy. I did not like Trump's 2019 comment describing the mainstream media as truly the enemy of the people, but one can see the basis for that sentiment when looking at how transparently extreme ideologues are presented as the arbiters of truth. Evans isn't the only far-left writer to get this treatment. While it's bad enough that there are journalists who express support for violent Antifa, there are some journalists who are actually more than just supporters. One such person is Portland-based writer Shane Burley. He's the author of Fascism Today, What It Is and How to End It, and has written essays for NBC News, Jacobin, Al Jazeera, Daily Beast, and other mainstream outlets. He's also a member of the IWW Freelance Journalists Union. In an August 2019 op-ed on the UK independent news site titled "I Was the Target of Alt-Right Death Threats Across the Internet, Here's What Happened Next," Co-written with Portland State academic Alexander Reed Ross, they wrote, "In a tweet, Quillette contributor Andy No attempted to identify us and others as covert Antifa ideologues, posing as experts for willing journalists, all of whom, apparently, have joined together in a plot to create some kind of media Antifa industrial complex. No is known for saying that anti-fascist activists are a violent menace who are being aided by the right, and a look at his podcast and social accounts gives us the impression of a man set on discovering Antifa bias in the media." The essay goes on to say how the writers have allegedly been threatened because of my accusation. "I denounce all criminal harassment and threats against anyone, and I stand by my statement. I did accuse Burley and Ross of being Antifa ideologues, but that's actually an understatement. As documented in the Rose City Antifa chapter of this audiobook, both men were instructors at Rose City Antifa recruits." In June 2020, NBC News published an opinion essay by Burley arguing against President Trump's decision to designate Antifa a domestic terrorist organization. Burley's essay was perfectly fine as an opinion piece, but nowhere is it disclosed that he has direct ties to an actual formalized Antifa organization. I emailed the opinion editors at NBC to inquire if they were aware of this. I included evidence in the email. They did not respond. Burley was reached for comment as well, but he did not respond to me. My experiences with journalism and so-called journalists since the June 2019 beating have been sobering and eye-opening. I'm not only attacked for my criticism of Antifa, I am targeted for doing what those reporters should be doing, reporting the truth. In September 2020, I was the subject of yet another hit piece in the local press. Portland paper Willamette Week published a report by Sophie Peel titled, "Portland protesters say their lives were upended by the posting of their mugshots on a conservative Twitter account." One of my side projects is to chronicle the names, charges, and booking photos of those arrested at riots. Portland's paper of record, The Oregonian, announced in summer 2020 that it would no longer publish mugshots, following the trend of protecting the identities of Antifa and accused rioters. But the public has a right to know. The arrests are important not only because the public should know who meets the standard for arrests, but also because they're often the only way Antifa are ever unmasked, literally. The Willamette Week story interviewed several people arrested at riots who blame me for the backlash or repercussions against them. One woman made the shocking allegation a man carrying a gun showed up to her family's home after I publicized her arrest. The story said her mother called police. But I checked with Portland Police and the Portland Bureau of Emergency Communications. They informed me there was no record of a phone call from the woman's home or any associated phone numbers. Willamette Week was forced to issue a correction to acknowledge this after I repeatedly contacted the news editor. As Unmasked demonstrates, Antifa can terrify, dox, harass, and intimidate without any use of force. They've been particularly effective because they have infected one of the most important institutions of a free society, the press. Ironically, media is now often used to undermine public support for free speech and the nation's norms, culture, and history.